On.
Okay. My name is Phil Stutzman. I am Eric's friend and co-worker. Thank you, everyone, for coming. There aren't very many of us here, but I know that you're here because you love and appreciate Eric. And I know you traveled great distances to come, so thank you. I first met Eric July 1st, 1988. At the Public Disclosure Commission here in Olympia, Washington, where I had just been hired. I'd been working in Missouri for 10 years, and my wife Susie and I were moving back to the West to be closer to where she grew up. And I took at the Public Disclosure Commission, and Eric was working there at the time. I believe he had started a few years before me, and he was the microfiche technician. He was in charge of all the thousands of reports that people, elected officials, lobbyists, political action committees filed with the state for their registration and reporting. He was in charge of all of it. It was 1988 technology. It was a huge Rolodex, like 6, 7 feet, 8 feet long, and it turned around like a manual Rolodex. And each little 3 by 4 inch piece of plastic had about 88 to 100 pages on it. And if we wanted to see who had filed what political finance information, we had to get it from Eric. So he was in the middle of this big room, and he was very talkative. His big booming bass voice would echo throughout the room, and everyone would talk to him, and he was sort of the gatekeeper. Everyone would get the information. And he also loved to eat. He had his own food into the office and eat, and he loved onions, so he would have some kind of a big burger with onions and hated the onions, but Eric always had good food. He also loved pets. As I would visit him over the years, he always had a cat. He always had pets. He loved to feed the birds and took care of God's creatures. We quickly became friends. I think we were just kindred spirits from the beginning. He loved sports. I loved sports. We talked a lot about sports. And he grew up in the Bay Area, where he fell in love with the Oakland Athletics. And back on the table, there's an original program where he has Reggie Jackson's autograph, other people's autographs. And he also has a picture there of Sparky Anderson, who was a longtime coach of the Cincinnati Reds, I believe, a manager. Somehow he met him at a game and got his autograph. He also met Festus, I believe it is, from Gunsmoke, and had that autograph. So he's very proud of those. As Eric's MS progressed, he started with a cane, he went to a walker, he went to where he couldn't work anymore, and he took a state disability. And even then, he was quite mobile. He would get around Olympia quite easily driving. He was just very creative in how he got around. And later, when he was confined to a wheelchair, he still used the dial-a-lift in Olympia and would go shopping, go to restaurants, and do all kinds of things. Through the years, he spent a lot of time at home after he retired from the state, and he ended up drinking too much, and he realized that. He almost died with the combination of the drinking and the medication he was on, and he was told, you just have to stop or else you're not going to live. And so he went to AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, and went through the 12-step program and was successfully completed that and didn't have a drink after that. And he would tell me every year on his AA birthday that it was his AA birthday. He was very proud of that. And he used to chair meetings at AA, and he even served on a hotline where people could call if they're having trouble, and he would talk to them. He had some medical issues where he ended up in the hospital. He eventually had to go into a group home from his apartment, and he was in different group homes, and then he had an extended stay at St. Peter Hospital here in Olympia, where they rented his room, and he wasn't allowed to get back in, and he ended up in Tacoma. And so I went up to visit him in Tacoma at Park Rose, and he had a social worker there by the name of Maggie Martin, who I think was good for him, and he appreciated. He went into the hospital a few times in Tacoma and ended up where they had rented his room, and he ended up in Bremerton, and that was the last place where he was at Forest Ridge. And as I was working to get him, helping to get him located there, there was a really nice caregiver or admissions person named Rebecca, who was very instrumental in getting Eric in Bremerton, and that was really a nice facility. They took care of him well there. Eric loved to read Mad Magazine. He loved to work word puzzles. In fact, after he passed away, a couple months later, I started getting Mad Magazine. And I couldn't figure out why, because I hadn't ordered it. And I finally figured out that Eric, one of his last acts on earth was to order Mad Magazine for me. So it always has a lot of a good political satire in it that he really enjoyed. One highlight that Eric and I enjoyed together, we went to the Washington Center for the Performing Arts. Well, let me come back to that. A coworker of mine, Kurt Young, who also worked with Eric, reminded me how Eric supported lowering the voting age to 18. I don't remember when that happened, but I think he actually worked on that. And he was a big supporter of George McGovern back in 1972 when Eric was 18. I do remember Eric telling me about maybe Dave, you would know this, but there was a long cross-country trip that his family took when he was a child. And it either had a Studebaker or a Rambler, some kind of an old car. And he said it was a very long trip through very hot conditions. And he remembered that his dad did not get the model with air conditioning because he wanted to save a little bit of money. And so Eric was always wishing that he had had air conditioning in that car. Eric loved to follow the Mariners. He, on August 15th, 2012, Felix Hernandez pitched a perfect game, and I had an opportunity to go to that game. My boss had tickets in the Terrace Club that I could have gone, and I chose not to because I didn't think it was right to leave work in the middle of the day. And then it was a perfect game, and Eric, I'm not sure if he watched that game on TV, but he watched most of the games. I spent some time with Eric's mother, Betty, also, and visited with her a lot, and she told me how bright Eric was in school. She said he was a very good student and had a lot of potential. He did go to, I believe it was San Jose State in Northern California for a few years and really enjoyed that. I want to tell you just a few things of his favorites. His favorite TV, he watched a lot of TV. His favorite shows were Judge Judy, Jeopardy, Wheel of Fortune, and I think his favorite was Impractical Jokers. So if you ever get a chance to watch those are pretty funny. His favorite movie of all time was Cool Hand Luke with Paul Newman, the I Can Eat 50 Eggs movie. Favorite baseball teams, as you can imagine, were the Seattle Mariners and the Oakland Athletics. And he loved the Sonics. And he loved Whopper Juniors. I think that's what they're called, burgers. And I actually brought five of them today, so if any of you want a Whopper Junior, we can heat one up. And he loved these New York peppermint mints. I bought a big box from Costco. There's 175 there, so take as many as you want with you. And he loved, in this last election, he was a Bernie supporter. He did not like Donald Trump. And going back to one of his favorite songs was American Pie by Don McLean, 1970, early 70s. And Don McLean in his elder years came to Olympia and performed at the Washington Center for the Performing Arts. And Eric and I went, and we enjoyed that concert together. He had one moment at his final place that was kind of humorous, but I don't know, maybe you won't think it was, but he had a roommate who was kind of cantankerous and didn't talk much, hardly ever talked to him at all. He just kind of ignored him. And he was getting frustrated, and at one point, he said to the caregiver, asked something about this roommate, and he said, "Oh, he's a psycho." And the guy jumped up out of bed and went for Eric, and they had to keep him away. And so they ended up saying, "You know, we think it's better if you two weren't in the same room." And so Eric, I said, "Eric, you know, you might feel something, but you can't always say exactly what you feel." So back to the American Pie. He loved Don McLean and this song, American Pie, and I've never known exactly what it means, but I think it has something to do with saying, don't ever let the music die in your spirit. You know, keep the music going, keep your story going, and that was indicative of Eric. He loved life, and I think the biggest thing I remember about Eric was that he never complained about his MS. He complained about the pain, and he complained about certain caregivers, but he never once said, why me? With MS, he accepted that with a very graceful spirit. So we're going to play this American Pie. It's Don McLean in 1972 in Great Britain. the BBC recorded this. And just think of Eric, he loved the song.
I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance, and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I deliver. Bad news on the doorstep. I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride, but something touched me deep inside the day the music died. So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys are drinking whiskey and rye and singing, this'll be the day. And do you have faith in God above? If the Bible tells you so, now do you believe in rock and roll? Can music save your mortal soul? And can you teach me how to dance real slow? Well, I know that you're in love with him, 'cause I saw you dancing in the gym. You both kicked off your shoes. Man, I dig those rhythm and blues. I was a lonely teenage rockin' buck with a pink carnation and a pickup truck. But I knew I was out of luck the day the music died. Here we go. I started singing, bye bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys are drinking whiskey and rye and singing, this will be the day that I die. This will be the day that I die. Now for 10 years we've been on our own, and the moss grows fat on a rolling stone. That's not how it used to be. Why, when the jester sang for the king and borrowed from James Dean, and a voice that came from you and me. Oh, and while the king was looking down, the jester stole his thorny crown. The courtroom was adjourned. No verdict was returned. And while Lennon read a book on Marx, the quartet practiced. The music died. We were singing, bye bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys are drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this will be the day that I die. This will be the day that I die. Helter skelter in the summer swelter, the birds flew off with a fallout shelter, 8 miles high and falling fast. Landed foul on the grass. The players tried for a forward pass, hit the jester on the sidelines in a cast. Now the halftime air was sweet perfume, while the sergeants played a marching tune. We all got up to dance, oh, but we never got the chance, 'cause generation lost in space with no time left to start again. So come on, Jack, be nimble, Jack, be quick. Jack Flash sat on a candlestick, 'cause fire is the devil's only friend. Oh, and as I watched him on the stage, my hands were clenched in fists of rage. No angel born in hell could break that Satan's spell. And as the flames climbed high into the night to light the sacrificial rite, I saw Satan laughing with delight. The day the music died, he was humming, "Bye, bye, Miss American Pie." Drove the Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. The good old boys are drinking whiskey and rye, singing, "This will be the day that I die. This will be the day that I die." I met a girl who sang the blues, and I asked her for some happy news. She just smiled and turned away. And I went down to the sacred store where I'd heard the music years before, but the man there said the music wouldn't play. And in the streets the children screamed, lovers cried, and the poets dreamed. Not a word was spoken, the church bells all were broken. And the three men I admire most, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, why, they caught the last train for the coast the day the music died. And they were singing, "Bye, bye, Miss America." I drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And them good old boys are drinking whiskey and rye and singing, "This will be the day that I die. This will be the day that I die." They were singing, "Bye, bye, Miss America."
Thank you. Can you hear me? As I was watching that song video, I do I sing? As I was watching that song video, I was thinking what I was going to say when I got up here, because I have a lot of thoughts that have been going through my head the last few days. And so I guess I'll just start with where I met Eric. I was at an MS support group meeting in the fall, I think it was 2014. And I'm a very introverted person, and I don't like to get up and get out of my comfort zone and meet somebody and say hello and all that. I want to be left alone, usually. It's just how my temperament is. I'm introverted. And I decided to go to an MS support group because I also had left the state and was on at home. And so I found a group of people that I thought I could relate with. And we weren't all the same, and we still are not all the same with the things that we go through, the things that we suffer with, but we all do suffer with MS in one form or another, and in all different degrees. And as we sat around this table, in comes Eric in his power chair, and I made assumptions about Eric as soon as I saw him and as soon as I heard him start to speak, because I had not known who he was. And I didn't know his background. Eric spoke a lot. He was very extroverted. And he could probably talk 90,000 words a day, easily. And when Eric would speak, a lot of people wouldn't understand him because of the cognition issues with his MS. And so he came in with his power chair, and he decided to sit next to me. And before I knew it, I don't know how I was volunteered to do so, but before I knew it, I was feeding Eric and handing him food and passing him napkins and stuff, and he was taking it from me and then asking for something else, and I sort of just ended up in that position. And I didn't mind it. It was like I felt like I just needed to do that. And that night I went home, and maybe it was a few nights later, Stacy sends out this email, and Stacy says Eric's in the hospital at St. Peter's Hospital. Phil mentioned that earlier. And that he had a bad attack, and that he was in the hospital, and that if we wanted to, we can go and visit him. Well, I saw that email and I thought, no, thank you. I don't want to leave the comfort of my home. I don't know who this person is. I don't want to reach out and form a relationship with someone that I don't know. And I found Eric slightly obnoxious when I first met him. And, you know, he sort of had that way with people. They didn't know his heart. They didn't know who he was. They didn't sit and listen. And maybe if they did, he would have had more relationships, I think. But so I saw that email to go and visit him. No, I'm not going to do that. And then that evening, as I was getting ready for bed, I felt God tell me right down in here, so go to Eric and tell him I did not give him this disease and that I love him. And I had two thoughts when I thought that. I thought, well, first about me. I thought, well, if you didn't give Eric his disease, then you didn't give Eric my disease, or you didn't give me my disease. And so that was the first thought I had. And the second thought I had was, no way, that sounds absolutely nutty. I'm not going to go to him and tell him this is a message for you. But God has a way of twisting your arm. And pretty soon it became a desire that I had, that I wanted to go and share this with him. So my wife and I went over to visit Eric in the hospital, and he was asleep, and I wasn't quite sure how to spell his name, so I just took a card and I wrote Eric Z with a period. And apparently he really liked that, because a lot of people who were in tight with Eric would write Eric Z, or use the word letter Z. And so he woke up to that card, Eric Z, and saw a note from us, and I was really worried about, what am I going to say to Eric? I'm not an extroverted person. I don't go and meet people. I could meet people in a crowd briefly, but I'm not very, you know, I'm just introverted. But when I went to go and sit with him, I realized that wasn't a problem. He would do all the talking, and he did. And he talked, and he talked, and he talked. And I realized, I'm quite comfortable here. I don't need to do anything. I could just sit and listen and nod my head, and he'll do all this talking, and he'll get it off his chest, and I'll go away happy, and he'll be happy. And so I did that. I listened and listened and listened and listened. And then it dawned on me, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to deliver this message I'm supposed to deliver to Eric. I feel compelled to deliver to Eric because I can't get a word in edgewise with Eric. Every time I talk with him on the phone or see him in person, it's just a one long string of all these things that he wants to say. And you know, I think part of that is that he was stuck in this body of pain and suffering for so long, and he felt ignored by society, not necessarily people that knew him, but by a large part of society because of his cognitive issues. And you know, Phil was right. He didn't say out loud and complain about his MS. But you know, in his thoughts, he suffered. And he wrote a lot about his thoughts, the things that he would think about, whether it was Papa John's pizza or peppermint patties, or when he hit a call button, or when someone came in late to, a staff member came in late to wait on. This is while he was in a nursing home. But he was stuck in this body where you can't move your legs, you have a colostomy bag, and the only way that you seem to get a response from the staff and from people is if you yell, or if you pick up the phone and call 911. And Eric did that a few times. And Eric was a state worker and had all these accomplishments with his life, but for an outsider, a medical professional, a doctor, a nurse to come in and examine him real quick, they would automatically make snap judgments because of the way he spoke. Because he was a very intelligent man. And just reading through his writings, I pick up on who's a good speller. It's just a knack that I have, a public relations background. Eric was a good speller. He was a good writer. You know, he wrote all to one side of a page because of the way that his body was suffering. But he was a good speller. He talked at length about politics. And you're right, he could not stand Trump. He made that clear in his writings. But and so Eric, you know, had all these everything that you could think of about a lifetime of thoughts, things that you want to say to people. There's no one there to listen, and the only thing that's in front of him is a pad of paper to write those things down. That's what Eric did. And so I wasn't able to visit Eric that often, my family and issues that we had and so forth. But in seeing these in these writings, he talked about family. He talked about growing up. He talked about the hardships of life that he faced growing up and later in life with his disability. He bemoaned not ever having a serious relationship. He had struggles with God in his writings. This is a very honest, you know, nothing, it wasn't perfect. It was just honest, you know, because these were things that he thought no one would ever read. But when Eric passed, it occurred to me, I didn't see him enough. I didn't go and talk to him enough. We were busy. And one of the things that I tried, when I tried to deliver that message, God loves you and he did not give this disease to you, he was very resistant at first. But something happened towards the end, before he passed away in November. In a visit with Phil, said, "Lord, oh Lord, help me." And that was the farthest thing I'd ever expect Eric to say at that point, because he had been so resistant in this message. But the date of his passing is significant to me. February 1st, 2017 is the one year anniversary, it's when, my baby girl turned one. That's her birthday. And that date is significant to me because my baby girl, after Eric passed, she was 14 months old and she was diagnosed with pediatric cancer. And she was diagnosed stage 3. And we went through this months and months long nightmare of being in hospital at Seattle Children's and treating her with chemotherapy and with radiation and going through this life scare with a little baby that... Looking back, it just seemed like there was something significant about February 1st. And so I looked back on my phone just out of curiosity, because I would sometimes text people and ask people to pray for Eric. And this is a message that I sent February 1st, 2017, the day that Eric passed. It says, "About 4:15 or so this morning, I had a vision/daydream, an immense peace. In that, I was looking at his hospital room from the opposite side of the hall. On my right was a nurse's station that stretched across the length of the hall. His room, as I looked at it, was filled with brilliant light, so bright you could not see through it. I had a great peace and was absolutely convinced God was with him and was healing him. This morning at 8 a.m., I received a phone call from Phil Stutzman, Eric's, and my friend. I was told Eric passed away last night at 2:30 a.m., before I sent you those messages asking for prayer. When I finally slept last night, I went to sleep absolutely positive God healed him. I had such a peace on my heart and in my body. I now know that was God telling me that Eric was free from his prison of a body that has kept him locked up inwardly and outwardly. The Bible says anyone who calls upon the name of the Lord will be saved. In the fall of 2014, I learned after briefly meeting Eric at an MS support group that he was in the ICU at St. Peter's Hospital. One evening as I was getting ready for a shower and I felt God tell me down in my spirit absolutely clearly, go tell Eric I did not give him this disease and that I love him. One thing I've learned since I've been home and God has been gracious with me and how he's taught me and been patient with me, that one thing is when I tell him no way, that's too weird or nutty or hard, he doesn't relent until you do it, but he changes your desires so that it becomes your want. The second thing I've learned is how loving and gracious he is, patient. He's described accurately from my experience and his word. He will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God. So I went to visit him and sat and sat and listened and listened and labored to deliver that message. And I remember very distinctly back in 2015 before we moved, I remember Eric saying on the phone, help me, Lord. Whenever I had approached and told Eric how wide, how deep, and how great God's love is for him, I was always met with resistance and wondered why God told me to go to him. Today I know, because God loves him. Anyone that calls upon the name of the Lord will be saved. Maybe it wasn't a fancy prayer, but it was heartfelt and it was desperate. And in those hours, at that moment, Eric called out to his Creator. And in another moment last night, Jesus took him to paradise. There's a verse that has been going through my head, and I just want to read it. That's this, Psalm 139, 13 to 16. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. When there's suffering in life and all the horrible things that we see, and a person's locked up and paralyzed, or a baby has cancer, or some other loss that we see, we often ask why and where is God? There is suffering in this life, but there's also a promise that's filled with hope. For God so, that word so, it's really been getting to me lately, so, I so love this piece of fruit, doesn't quite adequately convey the message or the meaning behind the word so in this context. The words are, for God so loved the world, he so loved you, for God so loved me, for God so loved Eric, that if it was just you, if it was just me, if it was just Eric, God so loved Eric, so loved you, so loved me, that he gave his one and only son, that whosoever believes in him will not perish but have everlasting life. And with that hope, someone like Eric, who's paralyzed and can't move and is in immense pain all the time in pain, he has a hope in Isaiah 40, 31. It says, but those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. I believe that Eric is with the Lord today. Thank you. Just an invitation to come up and talk about Eric, about anything.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Dave Nelson. Eric was my cousin. I want to start by thanking those who put the service together, and particularly for being contacted. So between Dan and Phil, I'm not sure how you all work this out. I really, really do appreciate you reaching out. And I was involved in putting together a family reunion back in 2007, and it was so nice to see those pictures of family. Just from a personal note, a couple of those people are no longer with us, including Eric, and so it's meaningful to see that. I also want to thank those of you who have contributed musically to this. So as somebody who really loves music, I appreciate Mark, your singing, Faith, thank you for your singing as well. And I'm so glad to hear that Eric loved music. And I was smiling thinking about his love for Don McLean and American Pie. Now, Eric and I were 1 year apart. I'm 1 year younger than he is. And so I was in high school, senior in high school, when that song by Don McLean came out, and I heard it way too many times. Never had songs on the radio, like you wish they would never play that again. The good news is that Don McLean sang many other songs. Vincent, a song about Vincent Van Gogh, was one of his favorites, famous songs. And for my wedding a few years ago, I had somebody come sing to my wife one of the songs he wrote, which was And I Love You So, and it's just most beautiful love song. And so it's just nice to see Don back there in younger days, as all of us were younger once upon a time. The day the music died is when Buddy Holly crashed. It was Buddy Holly and the Big Bopper and Ritchie Valens. Before I remember things, it was in my lifetime, but there was a lot of that was the memories he has of Don McLean, his memories of Buddy Holly. So a couple things about Eric, and I want to share that many of the things that people talked about Eric, I certainly experienced along the way. So I think it's sad, I'm going to share this, that I didn't see as much of Eric as I wish that I had. Betty, his mother, was my father's youngest sister. My father was the oldest of six. And so we lived in California across the bay from where Eric had lived in Livermore. And Eric was the cousin who was a male cousin. And I'm one of seven children. There were one brother, 11 years older. And my God, finally I had a cousin who was close to me in age. And he had the most important characteristic you could have of a young lad, that was me in the mid-60s. He loved baseball like I love baseball. And we would play catch. He was a left-hander. I remember him with short hair, so there's pictures of Eric in those ages. We didn't get together as much as a family as I'd hoped, but we always played baseball together. We always talked baseball. And I knew him before the Oakland A's and Seattle Mariners existed. And he was a dyed-in-the-wool San Francisco Giants fan back in the days of Willie Mays and Willie McCovey. And that was like the only thing that mattered. And my sister Jane and my other family members can attest that we really followed the Giants very closely. And so with Eric, it was wonderful to have that. So I saw him a few times, family kinds of things, very, very enjoyable. We moved to Oregon, to Corvallis, when I was 12. And the next time I saw him was one time, it was after I graduated high school, before I started college. And he and Betty stopped on some trip up north. Eric's father died in 1973 or 74 at a young age, and it was shortly after that Eric and Betty moved up to the Pacific Northwest. I know that Eric was at San Jose State for a few years. I know Betty came first, so I don't know all the ins and outs of his story before that. I knew he worked for the state. We reconnected again in the early 2000s a few times, visited Betty on trips up and had a chance to see her and saw Eric and his marvelous hair. I'm so jealous. I don't have that much hair anymore. And he had that straight hair, and he would talk about locks of love and how meaningful that was for him to be able to contribute hair to people who needed hair. And I have a close person to me who's actually needs a wig because of hair problems, and I think of Eric and his contributions. I know it wasn't Eric's hair, but the fact that he really, really, he cared so deeply about things. He was so passionate about things. So that love he had of baseball, which continued, as you all know, carried over into other things. And so you were never at a loss for words with Eric. He was, as an introvert myself, I appreciated that he could talk, and he could talk. And he was up on things. And so he was a big reader and knew a lot of things. And he really cared passionately about people individually and his social justice efforts. He really cared about that. So you knew his politics. You pretty much knew what was really on his mind at any time. That was Eric. But he really did care about underdogs and underserved people long before he had MS. So this was a continuation for him. He was one of the biggest hearted people I ever knew. He could talk about squirrels and birds and cats at length. But even at the smaller level, he really, really did care. And I think he was misunderstood by a lot of people. That if you didn't spend enough time with him, you didn't get to see that part. He could be, whenever I've been around people who talk all the time, they can be annoying to say that, because sometimes you want to get a word in edgewise. But he was really, really passionate. He really cared deeply about people. And he persevered. And as somebody who had suffered for a long time, that's easy to say. It's hard for anybody to do that and to live with that and to maintain his spirits in some fashion or other and retain a zest for life when it would be, I'm sure, and I don't have his readings, but he had to feel pretty down a lot of times. But he didn't convey that to people. I know his mother, on more than one occasion, said he didn't complain about his lot that way. And, you know, it had to be heartbreaking to be pent up that way as he was, especially somebody so passionate about things as he was. But to be not going on about how sorry he felt for himself is a very admirable characteristic. And I really, really admire him for that. So I'm sorry to hear the news about him going. I'm glad he's not suffering anymore, because I know he suffered a lot. And his spirit and his contributions to other people's lives and, again, willingness to stay the course, very admirable. And I'm really missing him. I'm so glad I was able to come to the service. So thank you.
Does anyone else want to come up and say a couple words?
So I'm Jane Nelson Eberhardt, and Dave's my brother. And so he said a lot of what I could tell you with my experiences with Eric also. So I was a year older than Eric. And I just have really good memories of finding out that the family was going to get together. And so when you're little and you get into the big family station wagon and you head across the Bay Bridge, and I tell you, it felt like forever till we got to Aunt Betty and Uncle Ed's house. And as cousins, we hit the ground running as soon as we got there, and we just played. All day long. We never ran out of anything to do. We were particularly fond of being cowboys and cowgirls, and we had our outfits and our hats and our boots, and had many wonderful pretend games along that line. I do remember something, and I'm not sure how accurate this is, but that Eric was a natural lefty, and back in those days, that was not a really good thing, and so they tried to change him to a righty. And so what happened is he became ambidextrous, and he was amazing at baseball. I mean, he could throw both, he could bat both ways, he could do all kinds of stuff. So we used to play a lot of baseball together, especially when we were at their house, because they were near a school that had a baseball field. And he always wanted Eric on your team, for sure, for sure. It's funny, because whenever we got together, regardless of kind of how old we got, at least for a period of time, he was always Cousin Eric. Always has said cousin first, Cousin Eric and Cousin Paul. Cousin Eric, bring me the baseball. Cousin Paul, where are you going? And I thought, that's kind of strange now that I think about it. We would go to their home, and my Aunt Betty was an immaculate housekeeper and an incredible cook. So I always really looked forward to the family meals, and man, could she bake. Well, that's really wonderful. And she was very artistic, and so she did She decorated cakes, and she the house was beautiful, and she decorated eggs. Maybe some of you over the years who got to know Betty, if at all, beautiful egg decorations and stuff. Because we did move to Oregon in, let's see, I was 14, right, like Dave said. We sort of lost track, and it was kind of left up to the adults to keep those connections together. And so it was a hit and miss sort of a thing. So we've kind of lost track of each other over the years. But I do have some good memories of visiting with Eric here in Olympia. And at one point I came up to spend some time, my husband and I did, with my aunt. And Eric lived in the same apartment complex. So we got to spend time with Eric. And as you've all said, who's spoken, he could speak nonstop about everything or anything. But I remember really, really strongly talking about being part of AA. And it was his night to be on call. And I was just so impressed with that. And, you know, he shared some of his heart about that and how strongly he felt it was so important for him to be there for those people because he knew how they felt. And so that really, I thought, boy, I'm really seeing a different side of Eric here. So as my aunt aged and was no longer able to keep those connections together, unfortunately the connection was broken, and so I did not know that Eric had passed away last year. So appreciate it. I really appreciate you guys putting this together for him. Yeah, he was a neat guy. He had his struggles. He was a neat guy. And I appreciated having him as my cousin. And I loved hearing his spiritual journey. That was really wonderful. I love that insight into his life and stuff. Yeah, Cousin Eric. He'll always be Cousin Eric. Dave and I have lost several family members over the last several years. Lost three of our sisters. And John, my husband, lost his mother in February this year. And each of those services that we went to just recently, I was allowed the privilege to sing, and I'd love to sing for Eric if I may. Is that okay? Okay. Well, we'll see how it goes. Softly and tenderly, Jesus is calling, calling for you and for me. See at the portals he's waiting and watching, watching for you and for me. Come home, come home, you who are weary, come home. Fervently, tenderly, Jesus is calling, calling, O sinner, come home. Why do we tarry when Jesus is bleeding, pleading for you and for me? Why do we linger and heed not his mercies? Mercies for you and for me. Come home, come home, you who are weary, come home. Fervently, tenderly, Jesus is calling, calling, O sinner, come home. Oh, for the wonderful love he has promised, promised for you and for me. Though we have sinned, he has mercy and pardon, pardon for you and for me. Come home, come home, you who are weary, come home. Fervently, I was thinking about Cousin Eric. He's gone home. It's a great place for him. Thank you.
I think we'll go ahead and conclude the service, and there's a meet and greet back here, and plenty of food, and thank you for coming today.